Worried about your home's furnace or AC? Not anymore. Legacy Heating and Air wants to make it easy for you to stay comfortable year-round. Right now, when you buy a new heating and cooling system from Legacy, we'll give you the complete package worry-free. Get a free smart thermostat, a free duct cleaning, flexible financing, and free maintenance for up to 12 years. This deal won't last long. Call your Legacy Pro today or schedule online at legacyheatingandairinc.com.
A Cook Family Business.
Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, the aspiring to be viral Notre Dame football show with the mesmerizing countdown and the wonderful sponsor in Legacy Heating and Air. I'm Eric Hansen. The guy staring at you blankly in the other box is Tyler James. And we'll be talking Notre Dame football for at least the next hour. You may spill a little bit over because we have so much to talk about today as Notre Dame hits a little bit beyond the halfway point in its spring practice schedule, number 9 today. This morning on a beautiful day when the weather in South Bend got up to over 70 degrees for the second day in a row, which is a much bigger deal here than the eclipse was. We would like to take your questions during the show. We'll work them in. And there's all kinds of other things like likes and bells and whistles and that kind of stuff. Tyler's better at that than me. So take it away, Tyler.
All right. Yeah. If you are new to YouTube and I'm staring blankly because I'm trying to get the butts in the seats, Eric, I've got to promote us on social media. Make sure people show up. We're on Tuesday. We got some comments from folks, Brian and Jason, that were commenting yesterday, assuming that we were going to be live yesterday evening. So Brian and Jason, apologies for not giving you more of a heads up. I tried to put it out earlier on Monday. So folks knew, but obviously you got to pay attention to what the actual date says. But yeah, so if you're new to the YouTube experience, make sure that you've clicked through so you can enter our comments or ask us questions during the show. You can do that by making sure that you are either on the YouTube app or at a YouTube site. Do not try to talk to us if you're watching us embedded on social media or if you're watching us from InsideIndySports.com, you won't be able to talk to us that way. So make sure you've clicked through to do that. Make sure you are subscribed to our channel here on YouTube to make sure that you don't miss any of our future content. And you can obviously go back and see any of our old content as well. Also, if you are not a subscriber to InsideIndySports.com, make sure you take advantage of our 30-day free trial to InsideIndySports.com. That is, unless you beat everyone on our staff in the Inside Indy Sports Bracket Challenge. I finished 30th, representing the high mark for our staff, which isn't the greatest. Unfortunately, I didn't take UConn. I could have saved us a lot of free subscription months by picking UConn to win, but that wasn't the case. But if you haven't taken advantage of a free trial yet, try it out. We have plenty of recruiting news coming up this time of year, and obviously plenty of coverage of the finish of Notre Dame spring practice. You can use promo code NDYT, which is an exclusive code for our YouTube audience, when you sign up to get the 30-day free trial. That gets you access to our premium analysis, all of our recruiting coverage, and special access to us over on the Insider Lounge, where we spend a lot of our time and share our inside information first. There is a link to sign up for that deal in the video description below. I think that's everything for me, Eric. Let's get it rolling.
Okay, so we're taking stock of Notre Dame football as the Irish completed practice 9-15 Tuesday with a pivotal scrimmage ahead later this week on the way to the Blue Gold game, which is another scrimmage, not as pivotal, but very public, set for 1 p.m. Eastern time, April 20th at Notre Dame Stadium. So our opening drive tonight is quarterback talk. We got to see 3¾ quarterbacks in action today. We had Steve Angeli with the ones, Kenny Minchie with the twos, CJ Carr with the threes, and Riley Leonard intermittently practicing today. And we also had a chance to talk to all of those guys except for CJ Carr. So we got a health update on Riley Leonard. So let's start with that, but we want to put Steve Angeli front and center as well, since he is taking the number one snaps right now. So from Riley Leonard's standpoint, he's undergone two surgeries, on his right ankle since enrolling at Notre Dame in mid-January. The first one was a tightrope surgery, a tightrope procedure on his ankle ligaments from a high ankle sprain way back in September when he was actually facing Notre Dame. So that was in late January. And then on March 22nd to address a stress fracture that was forming and was caused by an inserted plate. So Tyler, let's start with Leonard first, and we're going to shift pretty quickly to Steve Angeli. So what did we see Riley Leonard do in practice number 9 on Tuesday, and what are the reasonable expectations of what he can get out of practices 10 through 15?
Yeah, we saw him throwing passes, even doing a drill where the quarterbacks, they were handing it off to running backs, and they sort of catch a ball from Gino Gadulli, sort of like a snap, and then roll out and make a throw on the run. Now, Riley Leonard wasn't exactly doing an intense rollout and throw on the run, but that sort of explains just exactly how much he's doing. Like, he's not just standing around throwing a football. He's moving around and throwing. He's doing dropbacks. Gino Gadulli even said was doing some 7-on-7, which happened after we were escorted out for our allotted time of practice. So they're getting Riley Leonard as many opportunities as they can. Gino Gadulli talked about it's important that he has a way to sort of make up the time he's missing with those receivers, and 7-on-7 is one of the ways that he can do that. So I think we won't see much more of that, because we're not going to see a lot more of practice other than this coming weekend, but we will. I think that's what we'll expect to be happening behind closed doors with Riley Leonard as they move forward with the rest of spring practice.
Yeah, I had a chance. I was one of the people that had a chance to talk to Riley Leonard. He was kind of a surprise on the interview schedule today.
Yeah, I was talking to Steve Angeli, and the table where Riley Leonard sat was where I had just been talking to Drake Bowen. So then I heard people talking. I was like, I thought Drake left, and I turned around, and it was Riley Leonard sitting there. I was like, oh man, that's good news for us. So I'm glad you were able to snag some time with him.
Well, I'll give you kind of the ABCs of what's going on with him. Then we're going to jump to Steve Angeli, and we'll circle back to Riley a little bit later maybe. But basically, what caused the stress fracture, according to Riley, is that the plate was kind of the wrong size that they put in. And even then, it's very rare that it would cause a problem. Well, he happened to be the exception to the rule. It caused a problem with him and was causing a stress fracture. Now, everything that had been done in the tightrope procedure in January was fine, which was really ligament repair. And that still looked really good when they went back in, put a larger plate in. Right now, he's wearing something called a Taco brace, which was invented by a Notre Dame guy named Mike Bean. It's an over-the-shoe brace. And Riley said, you know, basically, he actually feels better when he doesn't have the brace on. He said he's not in any pain at all, and he's just wearing it in case he steps into a hole, or I guess falls down the stairs when he's leaving a class. And that's happened to Notre Dame quarterback before. But anyways, his feel about this is that just after spring practice ends is when he feels like the doctors are hinting to him that he will be 100%, that he's not going to have to wear a brace, that he's not going to have to think about the ankle, and that he's not going to have to be asked questions about it. So his chances of playing in the blue gold game are not very good, and would seem to be too much of a risk. He said really the only risk at this point is him maybe trying to do too much. And that's kind of his nature, kind of what got him in trouble last year with Duke, was trying to come back and help his team too much. So he's going to have to be patient with that. But right now, everything is going according to plan. And so the summer becomes really big for Riley Leonard in terms of his competing for the job. Right now, though, Steve Angeli, who Tyler talked to, is competing for the job. And I thought his interview had a lot of interesting elements to it. And I'm wondering what stuck out to you, Tyler, and then I may fill in some if you're not interesting enough.
Well, hopefully I'm interesting and the interesting aspects were the questions I asked him from the Steve Angeli interview. But I talked to him a little bit about competing with Riley Leonard, and he was pretty open. He's like, hey, I'm still competing with him now, even though he's not taking reps in the same way. Like, it's still a competition between us, and he's very self-focused on improving. But he's well aware that Riley Leonard is the person that he's competing with for that starting job. He gave a lot of credit to Gino Guidulli for his development.
Sam Hartman too.
Yeah. Expressed a lot of respect for Sam Hartman and what he's been able to do with that. Steve Angeli mentioned his footwork is something he's improved upon the most, and something that really dictates his accuracy. I asked him about, how do you think about handle the transfer portal? And he said his entire focus is on Notre Dame right now. He's a guy that lives in the present. He said, this is the direct quote, the future can be determined when we get there. It's not my worry right now. All I'm focused on is these next 5-6 practices that we have left in spring and just give it my all. So, and I even asked him if anyone's tampered. And he repeatedly said no. I didn't think he'd admit that, but I figured it's worth at least asking because I'm sure – in some way or fashion, someone has reached out to Steve Angeli or people around Steve Angeli to get a sense of if he's staying at Notre Dame.
In addition to that, those are all great questions, and that was interesting. I'm just teasing Tyler, but a few things jumped out at me as well. How big the Sun Bowl was, not only for his confidence, but for the team's confidence in him. There seems to, and again, this is all the more reason the team needs to see Riley Leonard be the better quarterback on the practice field, and why you can't just say, oh, well, he's healthy, he's number one. They need to see him perform, and they need to see him outperform, I think, Steve Angeli. Thought it was interesting, too, that he credited Lauren Lando, the new director of football performance, with more strength, helping him have better velocity on his throws. And then also, I thought it was interesting that they're not taking any snaps under center, that this was all shotgun now in the Mike Denbrock offense. So all those were kind of neat wrinkles. And Gino Guidulli, I thought, was really interesting. Some of the most interesting stuff was about C.J. Carr, which we'll get to in a little bit. But I thought your question was really good about how do you keep everybody happy in the transfer portal era. And do you want to summarize his answer to you, Tyler?
Yeah. He said he wants to be transparent with everyone. He wants to treat those guys as he would want someone to treat his son in terms of being a coach. So he talked about, like, they don't really talk about the depth chart in the room, because if you're recruiting quarterbacks to Notre Dame that are smart enough to play quarterback and good enough to play quarterback at Notre Dame, they should have a pretty good sense of where they are in the pecking order based on how practice are going, knowing what their teammates are doing, the grades they're getting. So it's not necessarily something that he has to spell out with a depth chart, because obviously the reps are parsed out in a certain way. And obviously the results should speak for themselves. So he is very focused, like I mentioned with Steve Angeli. Like, he's pounding into these guys' heads that it's like, yes, you're in a competition with Riley Leonard or Steve Angeli, but you're really competing with yourself in terms of trying to get better. And so try not to focus too much on someone else. I think it's a good perspective. I don't know that it's necessarily going to prevent anyone from leaving if they want to leave.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that there's really anything you can do in that circumstance. But I think it's a wise way to handle it. And it comes off pretty genuine as well. And I would imagine that the quarterbacks feel sort of the same way.
I thought it was interesting, too. All the quarterbacks were asked in different ways about the Mike Denbrock offense. I thought Kenny Minchie's answer might have been the most interesting way of kind of looking at it. He said a lot more is in the quarterback's hands in terms of checking out of bad plays or flipping to a different formation to take advantage of the defense, and that this is an offense designed for explosive plays, and part of the recipe for getting there is to make those adjustments at the line of scrimmage, which seems like they have a lot more control of that than Sam Hartman did with last year's offense. So that was interesting too. Tyler, do we want to take any questions here at this point or keep rolling with our quarterback talk?
We can. I think there's at least one or two quarterback related questions in here, so let's get those in. First one from Brian Habermel. I'm going to be – oh, this was Brian from yesterday saying that he would be able to listen live. So I don't, hopefully Brian is here again tonight. If not, apologies. Where would you rank Steve Angeli's arm strength? Would it compare to Ian Book or Tommy Rees?
I would say better than Tommy Rees and probably maybe a little bit better than Ian Book. I need to see more of it, but – in just watching him, I mean, Tommy Rees had Michael Floyd, and you look at Michael Floyd's numbers the year that Tommy was a starter and Michael was the top receiver there, and his yards per catch went way down because Tommy couldn't push it down the field quite like some of the other quarterbacks. But I think there's nothing wrong with Steve Angeli's arm strength. I would say when you look at all four of them, you don't see somebody that's below average in arm strength.
Yeah, I would compare. I think Angeli's in the Ian Book range. I think that's probably an apt comparison in terms of arm strength. I don't know that he would be someone that could consistently throw the deep ball with incredible accuracy. I think part of Ian Book's bigger problem, in my opinion, wasn't that he didn't have the arm strength. It was that he was he got gun shy and didn't always let it loose. And so that obviously we haven't seen enough of Steve Angeli in games to dictate or determine how he handles those situations. Obviously he looked really good against Oregon State in the Sun Bowl, but that was part of the Ian Book experience is you had so much to pick apart because he played the starting quarterback at Notre Dame for so long. All right, Jeff Stevens asked, Mike Denbrock talked about a sort of video game virtual reality program that the quarterbacks could use for learning the offense. Any more info on how much that is used?
Do you have any info? Riley Leonard got asked about it, and I was just way more focused on finding out what was going on with his ankle, so I really didn't – I moved that line of questioning away pretty quickly.
Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't see what Riley Leonard said. Mike Denbrock was asked about it and talked about it, but the way that he spoke about it didn't make it seem like Notre Dame has it currently.
I didn't get the idea that they did either.
It's something that Mike Denbrock used, or not. I don't even know if it was Mike Denbrock's idea. I don't think it was. It was something that LSU used with Jaden Daniels and some other folks down. Obviously, the other quarterbacks. And so that's what Jeff is referencing there. I included it in the notebook that I did on Mike Denbrock on Saturday. But in terms of how much it's used, it's zero at Notre Dame. I don't know if Jeff would like some context for like nationally. I don't have any context for that. But as far as I know, to date, it's not something that Notre Dame's actively using. But it sounds interesting. I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Mike Denbrock, I can sort of give some more of the details in case people didn't read the story. It sort of put the quarterback in the stadium, in the situations that they want them to learn from, be able to make reads, get comfortable in the situations that Mike Denbrock even said, like something as simple as being put in a away stadium so you know where the play clock is and you can just sort of locate it and it's not something that you're searching for on game day. Just different ways to get people sort of in the mindset of what it will be like playing either in a place or against certain defenses and stuff like that.
The one interesting thing for me, having been here for all three iterations of Mike Denbrock at Notre Dame, is how much more I notice his voice at practice than I ever have before. It's louder. It's more forceful. He's all business. I mean, he's a super, super nice guy, but there is a sense of urgency in his voice. And was interesting. I also spent a little bit of time over by the offensive lineman, and I heard Joe Rudolph speaking Harry Hestand for the first time today. So I thought that was kind of an interesting development.
I was going to say, yeah, it's easier for your voice to stand out when you're not sharing a field with Harry Hestand. Yeah, Notre Dame's offensive coaches aren't like very demonstrative. Not that they're not stern, but I wouldn't describe any of them as like yellers by any stretch. Obviously, there's times where that happens, but it's not like, oh, there's so-and-so yelling again. I wouldn't describe any of the offensive coaches like that. Now, granted, some of them are newer and we haven't seen them for a long time, but that is interesting.
When we talked to Gino Gadulli today, the quarterback's coach, I thought one of the more interesting facets of that conversation was about C.J. Carr and the fact that he learned a lot about C.J. Carr by them playing basketball against each other and how competitive C.J. Carr was. He said, I thought he was just going to sag off me, and this guy's bodying up on me, and he's like, okay, I'm into this. This guy is serious about being a competitor. And C.J. Carr, I'm telling you, he's being developed. He's coming along. Riley Leonard being, you know, partially available is benefiting both Menchie and Carr. So there is an upside to some of this in terms of future development and getting more snaps. And Kenny Menchie actually spoke to it as well. So that was pretty interesting.
That competitive piece, not just basketball necessarily, but they do a lot of stuff with recruits, especially guys that are committed, to get a sense of their competitiveness and how to how they handle situations like that with different games. Like, it's not like they're not putting them through like a combine workout or anything like that, but they do outside of the camp settings. Obviously, if you come to Notre Dame camp, they're going to ask you to compete in that way. But if you're just coming for a visit, on some of the visits, they'll have different yard games and different things that they'll come up with to try to get the kids in competitive situations and want to learn a little bit about them that way too.
So we're going to move on to linebackers. That was the other position group that we had interviews with today. We had a chance to speak with linebackers coach Max Bulla. There were, I believe, four linebackers that came up for interviews today: Jack Kaiser, Drake Bowen, Jaden Osbury, and Jalen Sneed. And Tyler spoke with Drake Bowen. So why don't we start there? He is in the mix to be the starting middle linebacker and in the mix to be a pinch runner in baseball. So what did you learn from speaking with Drake today?
Yeah, well, he's only been pinch runner in games that Notre Dame wins, so that means he's not getting a lot of use these days. sorry to the baseball program.
They need him to be a pitcher and not a pinch runner and an outfielder.
It was interesting because we were talking about the balancing act of football and baseball, and he made it clear football is the priority to him right now. Like, the opportunities that present himself in both sports, like, he's not looking to be a pinch runner on the football team right now. He's looking to be the starting middle linebacker. So the opportunity is there. He's taking it that seriously. Tuesday is when he normally gets a rest day with the schedule that they've worked out. He made it seem like there may be some football and baseball things that are happening on those days, but it's optional for him. Like, he can just rest. But the way practice was set up for football this week, I think in part because of the eclipse on Monday, Notre Dame football team practiced on Tuesday, and so he was out there on Tuesday, which is today. I know not everyone watches us on Tuesday, but or when we're live, but so I thought that was impressive. He admitted that it can be a little challenging at times to stay engaged with baseball when so much focus is on football and the playing time isn't really coming on the baseball diamond. It seems like he's holding up physically. He's mentally expanding his game. The big thing he talked about was, like, last year was about learning his position and getting all the details down of playing linebacker. This spring has been about sort of knowing what the others around him are doing and how that all works together. And so it sounds like things are clicking with him. I would not say, like, this is a done deal and he's for sure the starting middle linebacker, but I think he's in the best position to do that. He's certainly being pushed by Kingston Viliamuasa, who linebackers coach Max Bulla has also spoken highly about. So it was good to catch up with Drake today and see how he's handling things. And understanding the situation that he's in.
So if there was a game today, the starting linebackers would be Drake Bowen, Jack Kaiser, and Jalen Snead. And I think we're going to see maybe as many as six play significant roles or rotations. So Kingston Viliamu-Asa would be in that, as you mentioned. But the guy that's really, I think, very intriguing, I had a chance to sit down and talk with today, and the coaching staff feels like he's intriguing, as Jaden Osbury, who came to Notre Dame kind of as a, in a tweener size, as a safety linebacker size. He is very much a linebacker size now. And he has been so impressive in the practices. They're like, okay, we need to get him on the field somehow, some way. He needs to have roles. And so they're looking at him in a bunch of roles. And he was talking about this. He is a rover, and he watches film of Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who has been Notre Dame's best rover, a guy that was a three-down linebacker as a rover. He's also playing the Aztec position, which DJ Brown would play in certain packages last year. It's actually called the spear package, and it's a extra defensive back package. So he is in the box with another safety, Adon Shuler, right now. And there are other different roles. He's played some nickel for them, and they really love him in all these roles. And he's pretty excited about where his career is going right now. He mentioned that, and Max had brought this up about a month ago, that he got stuck on scout team at the beginning of last year, and he wasn't really very happy about it.
Yeah.
And then he realized that he was going against some really good college players in Joe Alt, Blake Fisher, Audric Estime. And he thought, you know what? My growth can really be accelerated by this role. So then he began to look forward to the scout team, and then he played his way off of it eventually. And now he's going to be in the rotation. So he's 6'2". He's in the 220s now, trying to get up to 225, 227 for the season. And I think he's a guy to really keep an eye on, even if he's not a starter. I think we'll see a lot of Jaden Osbury. What are your thoughts on Jaden?
Yeah, I think that's intriguing. I liked how what Max Bulla said about finding ways to get him on the field. Like you mentioned 4 to 6. I would imagine Osbury's 4, right? Like, I think he's that fourth linebacker in terms of trying to get find roles to use him. Balancing like the potential of Jalen Snead and Jaden Osbury seems like a little bit of a juggling act. How do you figure out ways to get those guys on the field, especially when you're going to play so much nickel? And so I'm intrigued to see that. Bulla even said like he's open to different roles and different niches for guys. And so I think that is promising for Notre Dame to get as much of its linebacker talent on the field, which it does have a lot of talent. It's not necessarily proven talent, but it does have a lot of talent. And I think a lot of Notre Dame fans, even the ones that really like J.D. Bertrand and Maris Liafau, are excited to see some new faces playing linebacker for the Irish and see what those kids can do.
Jalen Snead did his interview today, and Max Bulla was really complimentary of him. Felt like between bowl practices and middle of spring practice, no one has been more locked in at linebacker and getting their game up to speed than Jalen Snead. So he was really, really happy with, and I'd say Al Golden seemed to reflect those comments and or echo those comments. I don't know that he reflected them, but he echoed those comments. And so this is an important spring for Jalen, and he realizes that, and he voiced that. I think it's also interesting sometimes players talk, get asked about offensive players, and I thought Jalen Snead, and I think it was Steve Angeli, both mentioned Micah Gilbert as somebody that's impressed them. So I thought I'd throw that in there. One more thing about Jaden Osbury, too. I asked him at the end about Lauren Lando, the new director of football performance, and his eyes lit up, and he just said, you know, the way that he's helped him become linebacker size and yet the speed and be stronger. And he said a big thing, you know, maybe that the media doesn't talk about is recovery, how good the recovery system is in terms of them, you know, not being aching by the time they go to their next practice and they're able to give their full potential in each practice. So the recovery piece seems to be really important under Lauren Lando.
All right. I got a few questions here. If I can throw those in for us.
Sure.
Jeff Stevens asked, will Notre Dame use the helmet communication in the blue gold game, or will it be a hybrid to include running in plays?
Tyler, do you have the answer to it? I can tell you what Al Golden mentioned, but we didn't talk specifically about.
I didn't ask what they'll do in the blue gold game. I would imagine they would use it in the blue gold game. They're using it in practice. Yes. I think by the blue gold game around then is when we'll know for certain if that is passed for next season. I think there's still some like formal process that it has to go through, but I think it makes a lot of sense. Even if it isn't passed and something is of the future, if they've been using it all spring, it would make a lot of sense to at least use it for the spring game and continue to do that for the blue gold game.
So when I had a chance to talk to Al Golden on Saturday, you know, he has worked with us before because he was in the NFL for 6 years before he came back to college and the Notre Dame's defensive coordinator. He said right now where they're at with it is it cuts off after 15 seconds. That's the rule, or that's the proposed rule right now. And he said, if that's how it's going to be implemented, then they're going to have to do both. They're going to have helmet communications, and they're going to have some kind of signaling on the side, because obviously let's do it from the offensive perspective. The defense is moving around and they may change their alignment. They may all of a sudden show blitz, and you have to have a way to communicate with the quarterback to, hey, check this out. So they're going to have to do some signaling, but the crux of it will be the helmet communications. And again, maybe they'll tweak the rule so that it doesn't cut off after 15 seconds. What the NCAA doesn't want it to be is like the coach in their ear, hey, look out for the guy blitzing from the right side. You know, they don't want him coaching through the play. So there's going to have to be a cutoff at some point.
Yeah, Mike Denbrock seemed fully on board with it. He didn't have any complaints, although I don't know. We didn't ask like pressing questions about how long it should last or anything like that. But he seemed to be on board, and he said he likes it. And the play, he likes it most because it allows the player not to have to be like the quarterback to be focused on the signals. The quarterback can be looking elsewhere and hear what Mike Denbrock is saying and still evaluating things going on in the field and being able to look at player guys he's talking to and stuff like that. So I think that aspect of it was something that Mike Denbrock was appreciative of. All right. I got some more questions for us. Bob Bolt asks, hi guys, Bob from Oxnard, who I believe is a subscriber on the Insider Lounge that we see from time to time. Any clues on the severity of Jaden Harrison's injury?
I don't know that. How about you?
No, I just know that he was in a walking boot today at practice, was not practicing. So I don't know the severity of that. I have not been able to get any details on that as of yet, but we'll see what that means for Jaden Harrison. If it's a short-term injury, long-term injury, he was out doing workouts in the pit and stuff. And so if it were like something that serious that he would not potentially, he would miss the season or something like that, I don't think he would have been out there today, like in the way he was. So, but I don't know exactly. It wasn't like a smaller brace or boot on his foot, like Riley Leonard was wearing. It was a bigger brace. So maybe something has to heal there until he can get back out on the field.
And Riley Leonard actually talked about the differences. He said when they have the big walking boot, it's like walking on air. And this Taco brace really is, again, it's over the shoe. It's not like walking on air. It's like really basically doing everything. It's an extra layer of protection when you're out there.
All right. Blyberg asks, good evening, gentlemen. Thoughts on Sean Civilano? I've heard he looks like a duck out of water.
Okay. I have not heard him described as that. That's an awfully big duck. the thing that I like about Sean in what I've observed of him at this point, and he's not at the bottom of the depth chart. I mean, he gets some reps maybe with the twos sometimes. And again, some of that is because we've been typically in on Wednesdays. Today was a Tuesday. And Howard Cross, I found out from his dad today, is taking a master's degree course. And that's why he misses some of the Wednesdays. And I would assume Riley Leonard's for the same thing. Riley Mills, that he just wants to hang out with Howard. Sean is super strong, and he's got a really good burst for a guy that size, and he's well over 300. There's not somebody else on the roster that kind of profiles like he does. Maybe Devin Houston is the closest, but he's not anywhere near as big as Sean. Sean, if he were a little bit taller, you'd say, whoa, this guy has some big-time potential, so we'll see how that plays out. But I'm really intrigued by Sean. And again, he gives you something at nose guard that Notre Dame doesn't have. They don't have somebody that size.
Yeah. I don't know where the feedback, or who described him as a duck out of water. We haven't seen a lot of parts of practice that would be important for defensive linemen, if I'm being frank, we don't see them doing much physical stuff. They're doing individual drills. So I don't know. That seems like a very big statement to say about Sean Civilano based on the stuff that we've seen in practice. Now, maybe someone has heard that from someone on the staff, but I think certainly he's got a long way to go in terms of getting onto the field and earning that playing time, because they are pretty deep at the interior defensive line position, even when Howard Cross and Riley Mills are missing practice. But like Eric was mentioning, Sean looks a lot different than the interior defensive lineman that Notre Dame has on its roster. And so it's intriguing to see what he can become and how they can sort of round him into shape. All right, TD4ND says, who will be the linebackers in playoff games in December? Will they rotate? Will three stand out?
I'm convinced, having heard the linebackers talk today, and also Max Bulla, that there's going to be more rotation and some guys that have niche roles. And I think I'm pretty confident in that the four that they had up for interviews today are going to be the four that play the most. I wouldn't rule out Kingston Viliamuasa from pushing into that rotation just because he's already athletically and physically college ready, and all the other linebackers talk about how he's been able to absorb so much information so quickly. So I would not write him off in that equation either. But I think the starters, since that was the question, would be Drake Bowen and Jack Kaiser and Jalen Snead.
Yeah, to me, I mean, I who knows what it'll end up in December between now and then. Health will probably play as much of a factor in that as anything. Jalen Snead is a starter, but I don't think they're going to play a lot of Rover. I can't see them lining up against the Dolphins. Even if they're not playing the best offenses in the world, I don't think they're going to be able to play Rover more than they did last year. Even if they think Jalen Snead is a better athlete than Jack Kaiser.
I think Osbury fits that particular role better, I think. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So do you think Jaden Osbury would play more than Jack Kaiser did last year as a Rover?
No, but I think he's going to be on the field in maybe Rover-like roles. Again, that Aztec safety, you know, he's playing some safety. He's playing some nickel. But what I think might happen is they may slide the middle linebacker out and have Kaiser play the Mike and Jalen Snead play the will. I think that's still being worked on. That's kind of me reading between the lines, and maybe I misread that, but I think that's something that they're thinking about.
Yeah. So what I was getting at is just like, I don't know, like even referring to Jalen Snead as the starting rover feels a little like, well, what does that even mean? Because I don't know how much the rover is going to play. I do think like you mentioned, the four guys will play. It's just a matter of what roles they find and what different combinations they use. I mean, I don't think that they're locked into playing Jack Kaiser and Drake Bowen together necessarily all the time in a nickel package, for instance. Like they could move Jalen Snead inside or even Jaden Osbury inside. I think there's different things they can do there. So I do think the linebackers will have a successful season. I think they'll do some good things. There's, like we said earlier, there's lots to prove at linebacker, but I do think there's definitely a lot of talent there as well.
One thing, we talked to tight ends among the groups on Saturday, tight ends and safeties, and Mitchell Evans was one of the guys we talked to who's recovering from an ACL, but he said those young linebackers are fast. I mean, he goes, you really notice the speed with those guys.
All right, we still got some more questions, so let's keep rolling through them. Blyberg asked, on Saturday, do you guys get to watch the entire scrimmage?
It's true, we do. And I think this it's going to be more valuable than the blue-gold game in terms of our evaluations, because I think we're going to see real roles with real rules and guys competing, because whoever wins that, they get to be the blue jerseys for the next year, or they get their choice of jerseys. And the offense has won that jersey scrimmage the last few years. I can't remember the last time the defense was blue, but I think you're going to see a lot less, you know, vanilla that you get in the blue gold big game, because there's cameras there and there's people watching the game. I think we're going to see a lot in that game and hopefully have a lot to report. Cameras are not allowed at all, not even still shot cameras while they're stretching on Saturday.
Yeah, I'll only add that that's what we've been sold. There have been plenty of times in the past where we say that we get an entire scrimmage and they're like, well, we're going to ask you guys to leave. We got some stuff that we want to do you guys here. So that is what we've been sold. I can't guarantee that they're going to let us stay the whole time, but that is what it is as it's been told to us so far. Let's go to Carberry. Since we've been heavy on Blyberg, we'll get back to the other Blyberg question. Not sure how much you guys have really seen, but how is the O-line looking? Are they where they should be at this time, or do they need a lot more work?
I think we're going to be saying they need a lot more work in August, just because there's so much competition going on. And what Tyler said about the defensive line, I think is true about the offensive line.
Right.
We've seen one full practice. We've seen partials. Today was the most I've seen the offensive line, because typically we're inside, we're up on a balcony, and then when the offensive line does their individual stuff, they go outside. Well, today everybody was outside, including us. So I could eavesdrop a little bit. I know Tyler was over there too, some. So other than really general stuff, it's really hard to get an idea. I will say this, Riley Leonard was super complimentary. He knows that a quarterback should compliment his offensive line, and he was going up and down about how wonderful they are. So Riley Leonard is pretty impressed. But I think to give you a better idea, I think we need to see some scrimmage and competitive periods.
Yeah, I was just going to add that Mike Dembrack was also very impressed with the offensive line. He described them as his direct quote was, "I've been as pleased with that group as I have with any group so far during the spring." So that's a good sign in terms of what the offensive line has been doing. But yeah, in terms of what we've seen, it's been very limited. I think it's probably a good sign that we've seen the same five guys every time. Like it's the same starters, so that you would tend to believe that those guys are continuing to play well and play at a high level. Otherwise we would see some more mixing and matching, which we haven't seen any of in terms of the offensive line starters that are lining up when we're there. But yeah, in terms of being able to see them work together, Saturday will provide a really good look at that, because we haven't really been able to get much from what we've seen so far.
One thing, Jalen Snead was asked about, and Micah Gilbert came up with him. He's the guy that everybody mentioned, but he mentioned Billy Shrouth and Cooper Flanagan at different positions as guys he was very impressed with going against, and the two running backs at the top of the depth chart, Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love. But to throw Shrouth in there has impressed Jalen Snead.
Bob Bolt wants us to play a little place your bets. Christian Gray over under 5 interceptions in 2024.
I'm going to go under on that. I think he's certainly capable, but I think interceptions, it's almost they'd have to be picking on him, which whoever's opposite of Ben Morrison, it seems like
might have
the smart strategy. but I'm not sure if he's going to play enough between are Jaden Mickey and Christian Gray going to split that? I don't know. So I'm going to go under just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, I would too, especially if it's at 5. So meaning he has to get to 6 to go over that. The five makes it a little bit more difficult. If it was 4.5, maybe you could go with over. But it's hard to predict interceptions. Like Xavier Watts, he probably won't have as many interceptions as he did last year. Just like Benjamin Morrison wasn't able to repeat the amount of interceptions he had as a freshman. Now maybe Christian Gray gets more opportunities because he is in a secondary with some more proven guys and he is less proven than them. But I think it'd be hard to predict 6 interceptions for what would be essentially a first-time starter for Notre Dame. Blyberg asked, of all the football coaches you have covered at Notre Dame, including head coaches, assistant coaches, and coordinators, which was the most similar to Bob Knight in terms of personality? And that's obviously specific to you because you have Bob Knight experience.
I do. I had a decade of Bob Knight experience. That was my first job out of college 4 decades ago, was covering Indiana basketball. The most similar in personality, there's nobody that really comes close. I mean, language, Harry Hiestand. I would say probably a personality, maybe Charlie Weiss, as far as maybe media and fans kind of stuff. I mean, maybe Lou Holtz in a really weird way, in that the players, when they were playing for Lou, didn't like him. I mean, it wasn't until they were done with Lou Holtz that they embraced him. They're like, man, I'm glad I'm done with them. I love you, Lou. So he was pretty hard on players in practice. I mean, it's hard to think of Lou and Bobby Knight, you know, this little skinny guy with a lisp versus a 6'6 big dude that could probably be a pretty good tight end. So those would be the closest comparisons, but nobody's in Bob Knight's class.
All right. I think we've got all the questions. There's one from Jeff Stevens about recruiting stuff, but we can get that. Well, when we get to recruiting here in a little bit.
Okay. A couple of cleanup things really quick before we get in a quick peep of Aqua, cause we're going to run out of time. Was there anything at practice that stood out to you that today that we haven't talked about?
Well, in terms of the offensive line, what was notable to me, Rocco Spindler was working at left guard, in a number 2 role with the second team. So that made me wonder if, maybe Billy Shrouth has sort of locked up that right guard position or become more of a sure thing there, for Notre Dame. Now maybe it could be something completely different, but Rocco Spindler was taking reps as a left guard, as a number 2 left guard, and even in some individual drills, doing some double team action with Ashton Craig. So I wonder if we're gearing up for a Rocco Spindler, Pat Coogan battle at the left guard spot with Billy Shrouth at right guard. Other than that, we talked about Riley Leonard. I don't really know if there was anything else that was significant that I was able to watch from today. What about you?
I would agree. I think we've hit those. So I'm going to jump to our conversations with the coordinators on Saturday. we've talked a little bit about what Mike Denbrock and Al Golden had to say. This was our first interview with Al Golden since December. And so he has since signed his contract extension. But let's start with Denbrock first. Anything that we haven't mentioned from his conversation that you'd like to share?
I opened by asking how the offense is progressing. And he said he loves and he hates it. I thought it was kind of funny. He sort of joked that he likes the way everything the players are doing and how they're approaching things. They need to be more consistent and drill down on some of the details and sort of how the defense impacts them to sort of be able to take best advantage of that. I think that sounds like it was maybe reflected. I think you were talking about what Kenny Minchie said in terms of like making the adjustments based on what the defense is doing. And that sounds like something that where Notre Dame has is in this process with its offense of trying to get everything installed and then also taking it to the next level, because Mike Denbrock has continued to be the voice of an offensive coordinator that goes against Al Golden in spring practices. It's like, I love Al Golden, but sometimes it's going to be a real pain trying to go up against his defenses when we're trying to install stuff. So that was interesting. Mike Denbrock talked about how last week they did really well on a goal line drill running the football, but the passing game maybe wasn't necessarily at the same level. So that's where the improvement is there. I mean, that's not terribly surprising given all the new receivers and the quarterback situation. 11 personnel has been like the talk of the spring football, both from, I think mostly from the players. Honestly, when you talk to skill players, they talk about how Mike Denbrock's offense is very 11 personnel heavy. Mike Denbrock isn't necessarily committing to that right now. Like that's what the personnel that Notre Dame has available in the spring is best suited for 11 personnel. So when it gets some of its tight ends back, and has some more options, then maybe there's something else there. But a big part of the 11 personnel is the slot receiver, and that is something that Mike Denbrock has lots of thoughts about in terms of trying to get a really good receiver matched up on maybe the third best cornerback on the field. So I think that will be, even if it's not 11 personnel, they'll probably have some slot receiver alignments to try to take advantage of some situations like that. He will go to the NFL draft. It's funny. Mike Denbrock doesn't usually say the word LSU or the name LSU. Like he was talking about when he was talking about some of the slot stuff that Malik Nabers did last year. He's like that place I was at last year or whatever. But he will go to the draft. He's never been to the draft. So I think he's excited to see, how things play out for Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, and Brian Thomas Jr. All three, offensive players that are projected to go in the first round of this year's draft.
And I will say for the record, when I asked Mitchell Evans about, do you think Mike Denbrock's offense is tight end friendly? He's like, oh yeah. So he anticipates that the balance of power will shift back a little bit more toward middle ground once all those tight ends are in place again and healthy. As far as Al Golden, to me, what stood out was his demeanor is hilarious, because you would think that he was preparing for Caleb Williams this week. That's the urgency he brings to practice. I mean, he's loaded on defense, but you wouldn't know it from the way he goes about things. And so there is a real sense of urgency. And what he said was, you can't carry last year's success forward. There's a lot you can learn from it, take from it, but it's a new team with new strengths, new weaknesses, new leadership. And so there is an element of it where you are kind of starting from scratch, and that's what they're trying to build this spring. In terms of him coming back, you know, he said that, what I read between the lines was, if this wasn't Notre Dame, he wouldn't be back. Probably he would have looked at some others, but he loves the kind of athlete that he's dealing with at Notre Dame. And when you're fifth in the country in total defense, I think it makes it a lot more fun. And four of your best players come back, and Howard Cross, Riley Mills, Jack Kaiser, and Xavier Watts.
So, yeah, so, sorry for butting in earlier. I just didn't want people thinking Riley Leonard was missing practice for Masters
courses. I know. I'm going to get the Rileys mixed up, and they don't even spell their first name the same. So, you know, he talked about some of the things that they had to accomplish this spring. And again, I think you talk to the players and they are just so respectful of his knowledge of the game, how he has in-game adjustments, how he puts together game plans. I think it's going to be really exciting to see what they're able to do this year. We are really running out of time quickly. So as far as the Pete Bavacqua interview, we had a three-part series on Pete Bavacqua. I got a one-on-one with him last week. I would urge you to read it because we can't possibly go through everything here. Tyler, was there anything
Actually, while you talk, I'm going to put a link to it in the chat so people can check it out if they haven't already.
Okay.
So you tell us what were the most intriguing parts to you in terms of what you learned from the conversation you had with him.
For me, I think the most intriguing stuff was in part one, and that's Pete Bavacqua's urgency that not only does he think Notre Dame can win a national championship, he thinks they have to. And he thinks they have to under Marcus Freeman. And he also feels like the things are in place to be able to do that. So you can read the story and see what his reasoning is for that, including the Goog expansion and what's going to be important in what they're going to have when they expand the Goog, which will be here soon. Part two was kind of the front burner issues. So this is more of the day-to-day stuff that he's dealing with now. And that's, getting ready for a possible playoff game in December, how they're going to do that, how they're going to keep the opposing teams out, and how they're doing that in regular season games. You saw the Ohio State game was very different than the Seas of Red with Georgia and way back in the day, Nebraska, which Pete was actually at that game as a fan. Not as a Nebraska fan, though. So some of the day-to-day stuff that he's dealing with. And then the third part was really kind of looking at the future, how the student-athlete model is evolving, how he needs to be a voice for Notre Dame on the national front to keep their seat at the table with all this change going around them. And so, again, I think you'll need to read the story to get, a deeper dive on some of those issues and how they affect Notre Dame. But I was really impressed. And there's some interesting stuff that he said. Again, I'm going to circle back to the first part about the media rights deal, which he did have a hand in helping negotiate, having been a former NBC executive during his kind of 8-month on-ramp as an apprentice of sorts to Jack Swarbrick. And I think some of those comments really interesting, really personable guy. I think Notre Dame absolutely made the right hire there, and I'm really eager to see what he does.
All right, I have a few more questions here we can fit in, and then we can talk a little bit recruiting and then probably wrap up after that. Questions from IsU39. Jadarian Price was running with the ones today, apparently. Does this mean anything?
Yeah, it means he and Jeremiah Love are the two guys at the top of the depth chart, and you're going to see each of them get those kind of opportunities and sometimes on the field at the same time. So absolutely, it means something. Those two are out in front.
Yeah, I would say I don't know that like what we saw today was like, okay, Jadarian Price is a clear running back run. Like we were just there and they were doing some tempo drills. Jadarian and Jeremiah Love are going to have a very, both have plenty of opportunities to carry the ball for Notre Dame this season. And so it's just a continuation of what Price has done this spring and at the end of last season to put himself in a position to be one of the lead backs for Notre Dame this season. DBrasco22 said, who's going to replace Cross and Mills' talent level and production next year?
I think their hope is that Gabe Rubio is one of those guys. Jason Anye, Donovan Heinisch, I think, will be in that mix. We mentioned Sean Sevillano Jr. Brennan Vernon is a guy that they're hoping comes along at defensive tackle.
Yep.
We haven't seen a lot of Tyson Ford yet. So, And Devin Houston was scout team player of the week two or three times last week. I don't know that we've seen as much of him lately. And then Notre Dame is recruiting well at the position. So, but I would say Gabe Rubio and Jason Anye would be the two guys, with maybe Heinisch as the third guy right now.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said there. I think those are the guys that are in the mix, and whether or not they can match their production and talent level remains to be seen. I think Riley Mills, in terms of like talent and physical raw traits, is hard to match. He's just a very freakish athlete in size and stature and strength. But obviously there's other ways that you can play the position. So I think Notre Dame has guys there that Al Washington is continuing to develop. And I think those guys will also have opportunities to sort of prove what they can do in reserve roles this coming season, because there'll be plenty of rotating up front. I think the goal would be for Notre Dame to be more comfortable in taking Cross and Mills off the field at times, to keep them maybe fresher than they were at times last year, because those reserve interior defensive linemen are more capable to handle what they're being asked to do.
And if there's unexpected injuries or departures with some of the people that we mentioned, there's always the transfer portal.
All right. Let's just jump into the recruiting talk with a question from Jeff Stevens. Jeff asked, any 2026 targets that could commit soon from the recent visits? What do you expect from Jadon Blair, 2025 safety, in the next few months? In terms of the 2026 targets, I don't know that I get a sense that anyone's ready to commit soon. Based on the guys that visited last week, the three that I think are the most likely to end up in Notre Dame's class of that visited would be defensive end Braden Jones, a three-star recruit out of Chicago Mount Carmel, four-star linebacker Samu Muwala out of Lawndale, California, and then four-star quarterback Brady Hart out of Cocoa, Florida. I think that is the odds-on favorite from my perspective to be Notre Dame's quarterback in the 2026 class. But in terms of like when those guys will commit, I'm not putting anything on them deciding soon necessarily. A lot of those guys are getting out and visiting places. I think the quarterback situation for Notre Dame will probably be wrapped up by the end of the summer, would be the goal. But Notre Dame's certainly in a good spot with both Brady Hart and Noah Grubbs in the 2026 class for quarterbacks. As for Jadon Blair, I think Notre Dame made a really good impression on him and got itself right back in the mix. I think Penn State is sort of the perceived leader there. I think they're sort of neck and neck now. And so we'll see. He's got, I think, seven official visits scheduled, and that'll tell us what he wants to do, because he plans to decide on July 5th, which is his birthday. I had a story on Jadon Blair, if you haven't seen
it. Thank goodness his birthday isn't July 4th.
Yeah, no. We've done the 4th of the July commitments before. But there was the one year where there was two. I can't remember both of them. I know one was Brendan Clark, but I don't remember who the other one was.
We had a Christmas Eve one time.
That was Troy Pride Jr. Never forget that.
Because I had my grandson, wouldn't let me put him down. He was a baby at the time, and I had to post your story one-handed as I held Maurizio in my left hand.
So, yeah, I think the Blair recruitment is getting interesting, and I think Notre Dame really wants him, and I think there's a connection that's being made there. They had some ground to make up a little bit because Chris O'Leary is no longer on staff and had a really good relationship with Jadon Blair.
Anything else recruiting wise we need to hit? There were a lot of people. There's so many people there Saturday. We had to actually do interviews in a different place because they were all upstairs and they don't like the media to mingle with the recruits and their parents.
I saw in the chat, people were talking about Tanuk Hines a little bit. He would be, other than Jadon Blair, he would be the other guy that visited last week in the 2025 class that I feel the best about for Notre Dame.
And what position is he?
A speedy wide receiver out of Houston, Texas. I'm more convinced now than ever that if, as long as Notre Dame can get five guys, they will take five guys at wide receiver. I know that for the longest time we were talking about it just being four. But I think Notre Dame will push to five, especially if you can get, for instance, like Derek Meadows and Tadeuq Hines in the class. So that was a good visit for Notre Dame. I had an intel piece on the Insider Lounge message board for our subscribers that if you're not a subscriber, I suggest you check it out. It's worth subscribing for, at least in my humble opinion. And then I also later this week, I'll have a heat index update with where Notre Dame stands with its remaining 2025 targets. Some guys sort of falling off the list in terms of guys that are that Notre Dame is still recruiting. And then some sort of guys rising up in terms of Notre Dame being in better shape with.
Okay. Well, we're well into overtime. Do we want to hit anything else before we go?
One last question from Carberry Q. Do you guys think Angeli starts at Texas A&M if Riley Leonard isn't up to speed with the offense chemistry-wise?
Yes, if he's not up to speed with the offense chemistry-wise, but that would mean another setback from an injury standpoint. He's going to have all summer to work with those guys and all fall camp. And if he doesn't beat Steve Angeli out, then Steve Angeli will be the starter and I think do a very good job. But I do still expect Riley Leonard to be the starter on August 31st.
Yeah, barring more injury setbacks, I would predict he would be the starter as well. It would have to be like he would have to look very bad, I think, in order to sort of be leaped by Steve Angeli, or Steve Angeli would have to look like Joe Burrow to sort of lose for it to go a different way.
That's at Kenny Minchie's right favorite quarterback. Joe Burrow. So,
I think I would say Riley Leonard will still be the starter for the Texas A&M game as long as he's healthy. All right, that's all I have, Eric. I'll do a plug one more time for our 30-day trial to InsideIndySports.com. If you are a new subscriber, you want to check out the Heat Index or Intel from recruiting visits or any of our other premium content, you can sign up using the promo code NDYT for a free 30-day trial to InsideIndySports.com. You can ask us questions all the time. You don't have to wait till we're live on YouTube. And we'll hang out with you there. We have a good community of folks that are always asking questions and chiming in with different things going on. We were talking about what we were all doing for the eclipse yesterday, which I don't know what Eric did. Did you do anything for the eclipse yesterday, Eric?
I vacuumed my sun porch and kind of watched the shadow get bigger and then not bigger. I didn't look at the sun. I didn't have the special glasses.
I had an extra pair. I should have sent them to you. Appreciate everyone that chimed in tonight. Make sure you're subscribed to us here on the channel on YouTube. Hit the bell for reminders when we have content in the future. And hit the like button on this. Smash the like button, as the kids say. So we will be back next week. Football Never Sleeps.
Next Monday, we'll be back to Monday.
Back to Monday. So
we move so Zach, Eddie, and Gene Katie could watch us.
All right, sounds good. Thanks a lot, everyone. Have a good week.